Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of In the Booth with Sean Booth. As you can tell, Sean's not actually speaking because we decided to flip the script a little bit today, and Sam Cat, that's me, is going to be doing the question asking instead of the question answering. To my right, in the hot seat today, he is wearing black Nike high tops, some camo green looking cargo joggers, very workout attire-y, in a black long sleeve shirt. We have former Bachelorette contestant, future daddy, current pain in my ass, Sean Christopher Booth.
Wow. All right. Thank you. What an intro. Thanks for having me. I appreciate hearing a lot of great things about this podcast. So happy to be here.
Long time listener, first time guest.
Long time listener, first time hot seater.
That's what I meant to say. That was way more articulate. Congratulations on that. All joking aside, Sean and I were just kind of contemplating what we were going to talk about today. It's just us. We don't have a guest. And I threw out the idea of why don't we flip the script and I ask you a couple questions. And for some reason, he went for it. So, I mean, I feel like I have been collecting questions since you brought this idea of having a podcast to me, just because I know people know a version of you and now they're learning more intimately about who you are in this day and age, not necessarily 10 years ago on TV. And I feel like there's still so much more to learn.
There's always more to learn, Sam Cat. I'm excited for this. I said to her, hit me with the hardest questions you've got. Don't hold back. When I first asked her, I said, hey, what do you want to talk about today? And she said, and I didn't hear anything for like 3 or 4 hours. I was like, thanks, Sam Cat. Appreciate the input.
That is 100% correct.
But when she said, how about we switch the script? I was like, that sounds amazing. I'm loving it. I said, I'm in my feels today. So let's do it.
In your feels today. Okay. Well, I do have kind of three different areas of questions. We're going past, present, and future. We don't have to stick to that script. Sometimes we go really off-road here and end up talking about my ex-boyfriends of 10 years ago. So we don't know exactly where we're going to be going here, but I have an idea.
I like it. Look at the organization here.
I don't know if it's organized, but it's just like, I want to know the real Sean.
All right.
So or as much as you're willing to give us.
Oh, only one way to find out.
Only one way to find out. I guess we're just going to start with, you know, childhood.
Childhood.
You grew up. your favorite topic.
Yeah, 1986, May 18th. That's when I was born.
Okay, in Windsor Locks, Connecticut, correct?
Windsor Locks, Connecticut, yep.
And you were born and raised and lived there for your whole life, question mark.
My whole life, Windsor Locks, Connecticut. And then I went to school in Keene, New Hampshire for college.
I'm assuming from the way you've described Windsor Locks, Connecticut, that it is a pretty small town.
Windsor Locks, Connecticut, I believe, is the smallest town in Connecticut size-wise, not population-wise. We have an airport, which takes up most of the area of that town, but you can get from one side of the town to the other in a couple miles. So when we were kids, we'd ride our bikes all day long, but you could literally go to the other side of town and a short ride.
Do you, with that, like you said, I guess there's more population, which I didn't really know that, but do you feel like everybody knew you in town?
Yes, for sure. Very small town.
If I were to call your friends from back in the day,
yeah,
how would they describe you? Like, who were you in high school?
I was probably the typical jock athlete. All I cared about were sports,
okay,
partying, and women. And we partied really hard in high school, believe it or not. I talked to a lot of people, and I don't think it's as normal as I thought it was, but there really wasn't much to do in a small town. And we started drinking freshman, sophomore years.
So how are you managing being an athlete and also being drunk? Walk us through that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't drink before the games, Sam Cat, mostly the weekends. But we had a crazy group of friends. And one of our buddies grew up on a tobacco farm. So it was like, hey, going out to the farm, drinking beers, bonfires.
They've written a couple country music songs about that life.
They have. If I had a good voice, I could probably come up with some good tunes.
Okay.
But I don't have a good singing voice.
So you said, obviously, that there were three things that you focused on: sports, alcohol, and women, which leads me to when is the first time you fell in love?
Oof.
And it could be young love, puppy love. It doesn't have to be the end all be all.
Right. No, the first time I fell in love would be in college, my college sweetheart.
Oh, not even in high school?
I had a girlfriend in high school, and it was my first major girlfriend.
I feel like that qualifies as first love, right?
I guess.
Like first crush?
No, first crush was way before then.
First warm, fuzzy feeling in your belly?
Yeah.
Work with me here, Booth.
I think the first warm, fuzzy feeling I had in my belly was when I was a young kid and I was watching Robin Hood. And there was a girl on there. It was a movie, an old movie.
That's not real life, though. Like, yeah, I felt that way when I saw Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic.
Yeah.
But like my first crush and my first love in reality, which is where most of us live, I'm asking you about that one. High school girlfriend.
Yes. It was a high school relationship, but it was a pretty rocky up and down relationship. She was a cheerleader and a little older than me. And her name was Kristen.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is that why was the number one name on your list?
With an E, though. Okay. Kristen with an E. Yeah. All right. I was careful about that one. But no, first love was definitely college.
Okay.
Yeah. Sarah. That was my first love.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How'd you know you loved her?
Ah, man. It was at such a critical time in someone's life of moving away from home, going to college, and trying to figure out who you are. And we kind of grew together. And
did you know her before college?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, she played volleyball. I played soccer. We dated for a long time. And then...
what happened?
Yeah, we broke up after college. Yeah.
That's the answer you're going to give me on this deep and dark and lovely conversation we're having about getting to know you?
No, I think we've touched on it before. I think something that has been a positive and a negative in my life is that I'm always wanting more. And sometimes... what I have might not be enough. And at that time in my life, we were dating. I was working a job. Actually, I moved from New Hampshire after college to Michigan. I took my first job out in Michigan. She was in New Hampshire doing her school, finishing that up. And I kind of was wanting to explore more in the world. I did come back to Connecticut for another job, but even then I was still not satisfied with where I was in my life. And that's when I took a trip down to Nashville and I was just like, I need to make this move. I kind of got to the point where it was either settling down. I believe the next step was getting married because we dated for a long time. And I was just like, I need to go explore. Selfishly, I think, for sure.
Did you ever feel the pressure to kind of check the boxes? Like you were saying, you've been dating for so long, so the next logical step would be to get married.
Yeah, and I think that you can fall into that trap, or not a trap, but when you grow up in a small town, and kind of like, all right, you graduate, you get engaged, you get married, and you have a kid. I always knew that I didn't want the normal, quote unquote, or typical life like that. So, you know, here I am 15, 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
right.
I feel like that is something that is a bold decision to make that not a lot of people have the balls to do.
Yeah.
I'm being honest. I think that it is sometimes easier to just follow whatever rules you think are set in place for you, especially coming from a small town and seeing it repeated generations before you.
Right.
It's what you're supposed to do. But I do think there's something to be said about who you are now today that it's like obvious to me that not that I knew you then, but it feels like, well, duh, you wouldn't have followed that path.
Right.
You've always been kind of like untraditional type of person, you know, in the last 5 years. But I feel like that didn't just come out of nowhere. It was built from childhood all the way up through high school, your fake first love and then your real first love. And now we're here.
Yeah. I've always been like that. I've always kind of been a dreamer, mm-hmm. for lack of better words, wanting more, wanting to succeed, not wanting to stay stagnant. Mm-hmm. And I had a fantastic job. I got out of school and was making a good amount of money, got to work from home, company car, health insurance, retirement plan, like a sweet, sweet gig. And I know that that would have been great for a lot of people. For me, I was still not feeling like I was reaching my full potential.
Not feeling the fulfillment you wanted to feel.
Correct. And that's also something I don't know if I ever will, which is a deep,
I think
dark thought.
I mean, I don't know that that's dark because I feel like I really relate to that. I think that has something to do with being or wanting to be a high achiever. But you said that you've always kind of been a dreamer. So I want to go back to that. But when you were young, what did you picture your life to be as an adult? Like, what did you want to be when you grew up? What were your, you know, as a kid, they felt like huge goals, but now they could be a little more realistic because you're out in reality and being an adult. Like, what did you sit up at night and think about?
Yeah, I thought about playing in the NBA. And then I, realized I was white and 6'2". So. Okay. And not didn't have the greatest jump shot.
And you just came out of that dream last night? Or
yeah,
was this?
Yeah. Okay. No, I loved sports. When I say that, I mean, I would be playing sports all day in my yard, in my room. I would make rims around my house. I would make a basketball hoop out of a shoebox. If you went through my house when I was a child, and my sister and my dad will tell you this, all of the crown molding that was over the doorways were all ripped off the walls because every door I went through, I would run and jump up and pretend like I was dunking and hang. I would literally hang on the molding of my doorways in my house. And I would play basketball in my driveway with my dad, basketball camp. And that was the sport that I loved the most. I just progressed quicker and more with soccer and ended up playing soccer in college. But I loved basketball. I wanted to be some type of professional athlete.
Okay. So were you dedicated beyond what the average, say, sixth grader would be? Were you that guy that was in the gym late at night shooting free throws, trying to make sure that you were going to hit it at the game time buzzer?
Yes, I was. And also in high school is when I really started to work harder. And I remember I'd be working out when people weren't, or I would go down to, again, Southwest Park and play soccer by myself when I was a kid. Like by myself, running up and down the field, doing drills by myself, pretending to hit the game-winning goals by myself. And, you know, when I say we partied a lot, I was also the one who would, you know, be more serious during season and off season, kind of dial it up. But I knew when to like cut it back because my number one goal were sports.
I've never been a multiple sport athlete, but I think one of the things that I love about sports, especially for children, is that it teaches you adversity at a young age. And I think that sports, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I feel like sports really shape you.
Yes.
Especially starting at a young age. Obviously, you are a multi-sport athlete. What is the first time you really ever faced adversity?
As far as adversity, my senior season in high school, when, you know, I had the biggest expectations for myself, I worked my ass off, just like I was saying, went to camps, worked by myself, and had such huge expectations going into my senior season. And the very first scrimmage we had, I broke my ankle in like the first 10 minutes of the game. Broke the fibula, tore all the ligaments in my ankle, had colleges that were recruiting me. I remember I was with my dad my junior year, and we put together all these letters that I wrote to almost every college in the country. Got all the addresses, put my stats on there, mailed them out individually. And then, you know, we got responses back, met with some coaches, and just had so much anticipation for that season to start. And then kind of like Aaron Rodgers in his first game as a Jet, it was a scrimmage against Bolton in Connecticut. And it was just done like that. My whole senior season and half of my basketball season. So adversity was like, yeah, wow, my whole identity has always been an athlete. And now I can't even walk.
So then if you suffered a season-ending injury your senior year, how did Keene State become about? Because you did have a college career.
Yeah. And Keene State was still interested, but not as much. And I agreed to go there. I didn't play my freshman year and then had to walk on my sophomore season.
Got it.
So the coach was kind of like, yeah, I know him, but we've already got our team. So I had to show up, walk-ons. And then they put me on the reserve team, which is like JV basically. And then they put me in a different position. And then I played really good the first few games. And then I got a call in my dorm from the coach, the assistant coach. And he's like, hey, just letting you know that you're going to be suiting up with the team tomorrow. you're traveling with them to Eastern Connecticut and you're starting.
Damn.
I was like, right.
Did it feel like redemption right then and there?
It felt, yeah, it was cool. Because it was also my sister's school that I was playing against.
Oh, wow.
And she played for them on the women's team. It's kind of a rival.
I love that.
Yeah.
Little sibling rivalry. Whoa, rivalry.
Yeah.
Say that word.
That was it.
Hmm.
Adversity.
I didn't really know that. I didn't realize the injury senior year right into arguably the biggest time for your soccer career.
Yeah.
No, I knew you broke
your
ankle.
The scar?
That's a lovely scar. Your scar looks much better than mine. You took care of yours better. But anyways, I digress. So we're in college and you're obviously trying to figure out who you're going to be as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you study? Or did you study?
Didn't do much studying. We all, for the most part, all of the soccer players and most of the athletes at Keene State went into a program called Safety Studies. There's only like 20 schools in the country that offer it. The coaches are like, this is such a good program. Because there's so many few schools that offer this, the probability of getting a job out of school is great.
Okay.
And especially when I graduated, like right after 2008, which was terrible mm-hmm. for the economy, we all got jobs, high-paying jobs. And safety studies is basically like workplace safety, OSHA. One of my best friends works for OSHA, where you go out to the work sites and you have to be the dick who just writes up violations. And I was in loss control. So what I did was work for a commercial insurance company and made sure that the companies that we insured were good accounts to assess the risk and then make recommendations to avoid claims, basically. I kind of say it's like along came Polly, Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
A little bit, risk management. So that's what we studied. It was kind of an easy, for sure, it's very easy degree.
Okay.
With a lot of upside. Go Keene State.
Was that, so I feel like it's very common for college students to, if they're not wanting to be a doctor or a lawyer or something that has school after undergrad, a lot of student athletes will just take an easy minor mm-hmm. and an easy major just to get the degree and get out. Did you, I mean, I know you keep saying it was very easy, but that was the purpose? Or did you actually think, hey, I could make a career out of this? That gets me going.
No, I just thought, honestly, all I care about is soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get this degree. I don't know what I want to be.
Yeah.
I couldn't even fathom thinking about that, like down the road, which is crazy to think about right now. But also I'm like, yeah, how many people actually go to college and end up doing what they went to school for? Exactly. Look at us.
Black sheep. No, yeah. I mean, I went to school for broadcasting.
Oh,
and PR.
Just kidding.
That's what I'm saying. But I am like,
so you knew that.
I did know that, but I didn't really, I don't want to say that I had faith that it was going to work out, but I am the black sheep that someone told me, hey, you should look into this. I did it and I loved it. And now somehow here I am broadcasting in the booth with Sean Booth, but I've always had jobs in media, but I don't know many people that have done the same.
Right. I don't even know going forward how relevant college is going to be.
I talk about that all the time. I think that in our generation, a lot of us were the first of our family to go to college, and it was such an honor to go. It's like, how could you even consider not going? I remember there was one kid that I went to high school with that decided to be a fireman and didn't go to a four-year school, and everybody was like,
whoa, how dare he?
Flash forward 4 years later when everybody graduated and they're riddled with debt, and this kid's been making 80 grand for the past however many months, and it's like, well—
Yeah.
And now, you know, he's still a successful firefighter, family, kids, the whole nine yards. It's like there is, I think there's just such a different way to look at education and how to become a productive member of society. The answer is not always a four-year institution.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't think that that was common when we were graduating high school. Do you think?
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
I feel like it was almost like, I don't know, people like judged you.
Yeah.
How could you even consider not going to college?
For sure. I had a buddy did the same thing. Firefighter, super successful, loves his job, fantastic family.
And if, I mean, I also just feel like, again, going back to the whole, what you're supposed to do, quote unquote, graduate, get this, get married, buy a house, 2.2 children, the white picket fence, the whole nine yards. I think that that is also morphed in our adult life as well from when we were in high school.
Yeah, I do think that it's morphed primarily because there's so much opportunity now that's available through the internet, social media. We've talked about it a bunch on this podcast, I think, where opportunity is out there. So many different career paths where we were growing up and it was like, yep, got to choose a lane. And it's completely different now.
It's also so much more common to move away from home.
Yes.
In general.
Because, again, I'll say social media, where you see people living in different cities, you mm-hmm. see people experiencing different things. Like Nashville. You wouldn't have probably moved to Nashville. I probably wouldn't have moved to Nashville if we didn't have social media or television. I think I started to become drawn to Nashville with the TV show Nashville.
Okay. Yeah.
With Chip.
I also feel like you can apply to jobs online that are in not your town you're living in, which you could have never done when our parents were younger. You apply to jobs within the area that you were in.
Right.
Right now, I could get a job in Utah if I wanted to. It's not that astronomical to think about. That is relatively a new concept.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Do you think that this is like a loaded question? I feel like the glamorization and the almost, I don't know, inaccuracy of social media would lead people to move somewhere such as Nashville, having high expectations, and they get here and they realize that it ain't that great.
Yeah, for sure. Like you talked about how many influencers are now in Nashville.
All of them. Approximately 99.1,000%.
So I think a lot of people move to this city with hopes and dreams of possibly making it in some type of, you know, whether it's entertainment, social media, music, and
yeah, and being
because they see a lot of influencers and people living in Nashville.
And it feels inundated in the fact that everyone's an influencer. And yes, I do believe that Nashville is the exception to this, but that's still only like the 1%.
Do you think it's difficult to make friendships? Or I know we've talked about relationships, business relationships, anything in Nashville where everybody's kind of...
Yes.
Yeah. 100. Selfish, looking out for themselves.
Undo.
Not as bad as LA.
No.
And there are
genuine people here, but I do think that it's just a different game and you have to trust your gut instinct. That's what I tell myself and I refer back to it a lot. My gut is always right. And so if you feel kind of some type of way about someone, you're probably right.
I'm the same way.
And I do think that there's a lot of social climbing in this town and I'm sure, wow, that was good. That was good. Keene State right there.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of social climbing that can be, I don't know, make you weary of building true, genuine friendships in this town. Because are you really trying to be my friend or do you want to meet Old Dominion?
Right.
Are you really trying to be my friend or do you want to meet Sean Booth? You know, I try not to come off as jaded, but I do think that my guard is up in some capacities. And I know yours is.
Oh, I was thinking about it today, actually, when I was in the shower. And
shower thoughts.
Yeah, I think becoming more guarded.
Becoming more? No, we were just breaking those walls down. I know,
we were breaking those down, but now I'm just like, I don't know.
I think you're in a nesting mode, a father nesting mode, and you're starting to realize what's important in life because you're about to have the biggest change of your life. And I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm in a spot right now in my life. I think everything's changing. Professionally, personally, everything is all kind of coming to a head at once. And it's just very overwhelming. It's a lot. I love thinking about the days when I used to think that, hey, when I get older, life's going to be easier.
Yeah.
I'm going to figure everything out. That's going to be farther from the truth.
Uh-uh.
Now you look at it, you're like, oh, shit was easy back then. And now it's like, just when you think you've got something figured out, just when you think you're on the right track, boom, it might blow up in front of your face.
I always joke with my friends that life is juggling. You're juggling everything. And I don't know if I've mentioned it on here before, but I personally feel as though there is always one ball dropped. I'm juggling finances and relationships and my body image and my mortgage and my personal career. And as soon as I lose weight and my job is elite, I have shitty relationships. As soon as I have who I think is the love of my life, I blow out four tires and all of a sudden you're down in the hole, however many thousands of dollars. And it's like, you pick that ball up and then all of a sudden you gain 20 pounds. And it's just like, for the love of God.
Always.
Always. And it's just never ending.
Never ending. That's why a few podcasts ago when I opened it up, I said, there's three phases. You're either going through some shit, you're just getting out of some shit. And then when you think you just got out of something, guess what? You're coming back in towards some shit because it's maybe good for, gosh, it feels like a couple days and then something happens.
Do you find yourself kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop when things are going good, I mean?
Yeah, now I am. Where I used to think, okay, things are going good. Got this. It's like, no, things are going good, but something is gonna happen where it's almost a fault.
Don't be
where
jaded.
It's like working on a deal for like months or... You know, now I take anything anybody says to me with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Until it's like finalized, finished, like 100%. And even when it's 100%, it's never 100%.
I relate to that.
Ever. You can put so much trust and faith in somebody and then it's like, I don't know about that. It's just a lot.
I feel as though I've been accused of not being excited enough for when good things happen. They're like, it almost comes off as... I am not genuinely excited or pumped about something. And I just feel like there have been multiple times in my life that I've been excited for a big moment that would come to fruition that has been tainted by something that brought the mood down or changed. I don't know, like this is not a terrible example, but the most recent one, I bought my first house. Mm-hmm. I bought my first house and my parents were going to help me move in and it was going to be the best thing. And my favorite person in my family at the time passed away. So that is such an extreme high and low at the same fucking time. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the more you open up to the happiness, then when it falls through, I feel like that pendulum swings even farther to the other side and it's even more sadness.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's something that you learn with age. There's always something which... you know, makes you stronger in the long run, but makes you jaded, like you said, a little less excited. Like something stupid last week, I had a damn window at my house, the front picture window. I posted on social media. Walter went right through the damn thing. It took me so long to get it fixed and to find somebody that could put that pane in where it needed to be. As an older window, I have a checklist on my phone. And I'm the person that needs to check things off, mm-hmm. right? And so I have things that have been sitting there for a while. I'm like, I gotta get this done. So I finally got it done. Boom. Fixed window. Checked off. Not even joking. 2 days later, I mow my lawn in the backyard. And then I come inside. And there's a rock in the middle of the dining room. And I'm like, where did Walter get a rock? And I'm like, that's so weird. Did he pick one up when he came through the garage? I'm like, whatever. And then I'm... at my dining room table and I see like flakes of stuff. And I'm like, did I open a box here? What is that stuff? And then whatever, 2 hours goes by and then I realized I was mowing the lawn and put a rock through the back window and the whole back window was shattered with that rock. And I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I literally just fixed the front one. What are the chances of me shattering another window? I've been here for 3 or 4 years. I've never broke a single window.
That's how it always is. You cross one off the top and add one to the bottom. The list never gets shorter. It's wild. Just continues.
Yeah. And we're going to take a halftime break. And this break is brought to you by HelloFresh, somebody that I use and love because, first of all, they're very convenient. And if you're busy, they have amazing, amazing tasty recipes that you can cook up for yourself and or your family. And fall is right around the corner, and HelloFresh is here to help you plan for the busy season ahead with tasty dishes delivered straight to your door. Simply choose your recipes and pick your delivery date, and then just lay back and enjoy the last days of summer knowing that dinner is covered. And the key to dinner time success, Sam Cat, is variety. HelloFresh keeps your taste buds on their toes with 40 chef-crafted recipes to select from every week. From family-friendly to fit and wholesome, you'll always find new and exciting recipes to try and love. Go to HelloFresh.com/50Booth. That's with two O's. And use code 50Booth for 50% off plus free shipping. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/50 Booth and use code 50 BOOTH for 50% off plus free shipping. It's America's number one meal kit.
Do you feel like when you were first, you first graduated, you said you had a, you know, a real adult job, you're living in the Midwest, and you said that you always felt like you were a dreamer and you wanted to be more fulfilled and all those things. At what point did you think that going on national television to find love was going to fill that void? Because you did have, quote unquote, a normal life.
Right.
Before you volunteered.
I did.
To put yourself on display.
Yeah. I don't know if that was something that, you know, I obviously wasn't planning for that.
Yeah.
Did I think it was going to fill a void? Maybe. I did enjoy the feelings of going through it because I think in life, you get to a point where you just go through the motions and you go through the same things every day. You go to the same job every day. You wake up, you're this old, you're older, and you don't have as much excitement. I will say that when I was on the show, it brought out every emotion possible, the highs and lows, and just the excitement of being there. And I think I opened up so much because I wanted to, right? Like I had years of not opening up and I'm like, here I am. This is like the perfect opportunity and I'm going to just give everything I've got. And it felt so good to do that. That's what I enjoyed about the show. And then coming back and trying to face a new reality of that was tricky, but I don't think it filled a void. No, I don't think it filled a void, but it made things feel better for a moment.
Okay. Do you feel like you learned more about yourself? Or I guess what I'm saying is, did you learn more about yourself as a lover, as a partner, as a person in general, as a public figure? Like, which one do you feel like you really leaned into while you were on the show?
I think I really was able to show my heart and my feelings. So when people, you know, want to talk about my relationship with Caitlin and, you know, try and criticize it or criticize me for when it ended or if I've talked about it before, everything I was saying was how I was feeling. Mm-hmm. It was the situation that maybe made those feelings a lot stronger than they would have been. You know, you're sitting there and you have fucking, you know, I don't know how many cameras on you, and I heard that there's over 150 people on site for a one-on-one date. You just can't see them all. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever feel like you were truly yourself?
At some points, yes. But I also wish that I took time to listen to my own thoughts and feelings. You know, I did have things in my gut telling me to do maybe different things. Mm-hmm. But I got to a point where I just kind of went along with things. And so that is one thing that I wish I had done, is to be more true to what I was genuinely feeling and dig deeper inside and not worry about anything else. Because I was at the end of the show very much concerned about how I would have been perceived. Because I even asked a producer at the end, what would happen if I don't propose? Because I don't feel like I am ready. I know I'm not ready. I don't really know her that well. Do I think I'm in love with her? Yes. But also, we all know this is crazy. And I remember asking the producer, what if I don't propose? He said, then everybody in America is going to hate you.
No pressure.
Yeah. But even said like Juan Pablo was a guy that everybody hated, like compared it to that. But basically telling me, yeah, it's going to be bad if you don't propose. And so here I am by myself living in this house that, you know, there's producers. I mean, because this is at the very end of the show, where I had to stay in a house by myself. a producer with me the entire time. You can't talk to anybody, no computer, no phone, no internet. You can't consult with your friends, your family. And I've never been through this situation before, but I have a guy who's working on the show who's been here for years telling me that if I don't do this, I'm going to come off the show and I'm going to have the whole country hating me.
Yeah. And that's real.
Yeah.
You know, they now, especially in hindsight, you've seen just the force that Bachelor Nation is. It's a force to be reckoned with. They do not hold back. They are very opinionated and they love to love and they love to hate. And there's not a lot of in the middle.
There's not.
So that producer was spot on.
Yeah. But also, yeah, he was. But
does it really matter?
Yeah. Now I wouldn't care.
But you know that now.
I know it now.
That's unfair to even say that because you didn't know it at the time.
Exactly.
But you guys had a decently, I mean, I feel like a pretty long relationship. It wasn't like just the show and done. You really did put in the time.
Right.
So there were aspects of that relationship that had to have been genuine and had to have been true. Mm-hmm. What do you think that relationship taught you the most about you?
That relationship obviously had a lot of pressure. And there were times where I felt like I couldn't be myself. Mm-hmm. So I think that that taught me to not worry about what anybody else thinks and just be yourself.
Do you think that you've held yourself accountable to that standard now into present day?
I think I'm getting better at it for sure.
Okay.
And I think a lot of that too recently with becoming a new dad, more than ever, I'm like, I don't care what anybody thinks. Like, I have a much bigger priority in my life. This is the first time in my life after 37 years, I can't live selfishly anymore. Yeah. I'm going to be living for my kid. And all the other things I've worried about, the small things, little things, none of it matters. Because going forward, it's all going to be about baby Booth. And that's put a whole different outlook on my life.
Good. That makes me feel really good that you feel that way. And I am, I don't know, proud of you for that. Because I think, obviously, there's nothing bigger in life than having a child.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you've learned, you know, maybe in the interim from the show to now your current future child right around the corner and all of those things? You've obviously had relationships during that time. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you're like, ooh, I can't do that anymore? Because like you said, now I have a different priority. I understand that you said not caring what other people think, but I'm saying your actions, like, ooh, I didn't like that about myself. I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I can honestly say that I think that I've lived pretty selfishly. Not in necessarily a bad way or a malicious way. I've just always kind of done what I've wanted to do for the most part. So I don't know if there's anything in particular. Yeah.
How's it feel to be in the hot seat?
Yeah.
With no prep.
Seat is burning. It's burning. No, I think I'm able to recognize that. Again, I've lived selfishly. I've created businesses. I've spent a lot of my time working my ass off. And, you know, a lot of that too was not wanting to get into anything committed with the relationship because I knew that I can't, you know, give myself to somebody if I'm still trying to give it to myself. Mm-hmm. So it's always, you know, trying to figure that out.
I don't know if you've noticed, but we've kind of transitioned into my current day questions.
Yeah.
We got through the past. Now we're in current day.
We did.
I want you to tell me and all of the people listening.
Yeah.
When you wake up in the morning now,
yeah,
as someone who's learned through very untraditional experiences, what is the one thing that makes you happier than ever?
I mean, I feel like it's...
You can't say the kid. That's the obvious. We know that. I'm saying, what is something...
That's a good question, because today...
That makes you feel fuzzy inside.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because today, it's wild that you're asking this. When I woke up today, I didn't want to get out of bed. I got up and went back in bed because I wasn't feeling great. I was just very overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually up at it. Let's go. Let's get this day started. I'm up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, 6, 6:30, the latest. I got up and I was just like so overwhelmed. You know when that happens, when you get up and all of a sudden everything in your life, all these thoughts start going through your brain. You can't slow them down and you're trying to figure out what the next move is, what you're going to do. And I was just like, I need to go back in bed. And I laid back in bed for a while and sat there and laid there. And then I forced myself to get up.
So how do you pull yourself out of that feeling?
Well, today my motivation was, I knew we were going to record a podcast. And I think that having a clear mind and being able to think clearly is good for recording these episodes, because I do put a lot of effort into these shows, and I enjoy coming here to meet with you every week to talk, and I didn't want to be jaded by anything in my head, and I want to make sure that we get out a good show every week to the people listening. And I think that if, you know, you have all these crazy thoughts going on and you're distracted, then, you know, doing something like this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So that was motivation for me today, getting Walter outside, because it's technically the first day of the week where I don't have to go to the gym in the morning. So like Tuesdays and Wednesdays are my weekends per se. So I'm like, yeah, Walter's been, you know, patiently waiting for me to get up. And it's just forcing yourself. I wish I had like a trick or a secret, like, yeah, I said this, or I'm like, no, I just got to fucking do it. And a lot of times you do have to do it. And a lot of times I come across as somebody who's just like, you know, maybe strong at everything. Or at least I try to like help people with being mentally strong and being focused. And, you know, today I was weak. I was weak in the morning, which is fine though, because it happens to everybody. So I don't know. I wasn't happy for anything this morning besides thinking about the baby. It was just a lot. I was very overwhelmed.
I feel like the baby is, I don't know that you're going to find anything that will make you happier.
Right.
But I was just trying to dig a little deeper, pretend like the baby didn't exist for 2 seconds. But I understand that it is, I'm putting words in your mouth, so tell me if I'm incorrect. Did you just wipe your mouth on the microphone?
Yeah, I did.
Then Jesus.
Then I realized that was not a good move. What?
I don't even remember what I was going to say now. Yep. You threw me off with wiping your mouth on the microphone.
I had a little coffee.
On your stash?
Yeah, now it's off.
Hey, anyways, transition there.
What are you happy about?
I literally don't know what I was going
to
say to you.
You're just trying to say that the baby didn't exist.
Oh, okay.
Are you
okay,
still
yes.
trying to say what am I
yeah,
happy
no,
about?
No. Okay. Wow. Yes, but no, I was just saying something that would be not so monumental. What I'm saying is like, the baby is the happiest thing ever.
Right.
But for those of us who are listening out there who don't have that to look forward to,
right.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Is something that isn't so blatantly obvious that it's like, well, duh. But I feel like you touched on it.
Yeah.
Walking Walter and being outside and getting up and all of those things. That's all I was curious about.
Yeah. But I have to remind myself a lot how grateful I am for a lot of things in my life.
That is my next question. You just read my brain.
I know. I saw that.
You right did. Your brain. I'm very impressed with you.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, what is one thing that you're working on to not forget that you're very grateful for?
Yeah.
What is something that you have caught yourself being ungrateful for and stopped and been like, holy shit, people would die to have this?
Yeah. I do that constantly because of the curse that I have of wanting more mm-hmm. and never being good enough and never settling. It has been an absolute blessing and a curse. If I didn't have that, I would be probably in Connecticut or New Hampshire right now with like 18 kids working for an insurance company, which could be fantastic. I don't know. That's something I'll never know. But I've created this whole other life that if I told myself 10, 15, 20 years ago that I had, like, dude, that's fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. I get to wake up every morning, don't need to report to anybody, I own a business that I've worked my ass off at the gym for 5 years, 6 years. I'm there every single day. I live in an amazing city. I have a baby on the way. I get to, you know, like right now we're sitting in this podcast studio talking about our feelings. Most people are at work right now. Mm-hmm. So I have to remind myself of these things because I can get caught in the what's next. What's next?
Do you write down what you're grateful for?
I used to. I need to write more. I used to write more. I had a journal going for a while, personally.
I have a challenge for you.
Yeah.
Set an alarm on your phone once a week. Open your notes app. List 5 things that you're grateful for that happened this week.
Yeah.
I do it every Sunday at 10 a.m.
All right.
And it can be as dumb as my coffee tasted great today at Starbucks.
Yeah.
And as monumental as my first child was born.
Yeah.
And I do think that in the moment, it is maybe not as big of a deal, but there have been times that I've had terrible days and I've opened that and I've scrolled back and it literally makes me emotional to think about because I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that.
Right.
And it's just a little reminder of you have made it through 100% of all of the hard days you've ever had to get to this exact moment. And in the meantime, look at all of the great things that you've also done.
Yeah.
I think it's so easy to get caught up in a game of comparison, in a game of, am I enough? What is next? And all of those things, even when you have everything in your hand and your life looks or feels great most of the time. I just think it's human nature to not always be at a peak. There is valley, you know? Right. And I think a concrete actual bullet point that you've written down that came from you and only you is a like stark reminder of where you're at and where you've been.
Right.
Good, bad, ugly, in between.
Yeah. I'll do
you
that.
You should try that.
I should try that. I need that. I definitely need that.
And I literally put a like an alarm on my phone. It goes off every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to remember.
No.
I'm going to get caught up in the fact that I'm tired and I miss this and I have to grocery shop and just being an adult.
Yeah.
But.
For sure.
It will remind you. And if you snooze it, it'll show up 9 minutes later and it'll ask you to do it again.
And keep snoozing until you can't snooze.
No, you'll get annoyed.
Challenge accepted. No, I need that for sure because I have so much to be grateful for. So much.
So, obviously, the elephant in the room, the biggest gratefulness that you have is this child that's going to come on in December, December 12th?
December 12th.
Maybe. Maybe
possibly.
Before.
Maybe before.
Maybe after. We don't know.
Could be a Thanksgiving baby. Could be a Christmas baby. Thanksgiving would be cool.
I feel like Dre would really like that.
She's trying to get it out early.
I mean, aren't they all? I don't blame her. Yeah. I don't blame her at all. But what is, we'll start negative and we'll go positive. What is your biggest fear? Not just of being a new dad, just what's your biggest fear of taking on the responsibility of a human life?
The biggest thought that I have is making sure that I'm somebody that they can be proud to say that I'm their dad. I want them to be proud for all my weaknesses and strengths. At the end of the day, I want them to be like, hell yeah, I love my dad. So that is something where I want to make sure that I am mentally and emotionally ready for. The scary thing is obviously the safety and health of your baby, stuff that you can't control. Like they can go out, you know, on their own when they get old enough and you can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
I think about some of the crazy stuff that I did. I'm like, man.
Different perspective now.
Very different. The world is crazy. You can't trust anybody outside. So yeah, that's a very, very scary thing.
What do you feel like will be the best feeling? Like say you're on your deathbed. Yeah. You're like, you know what? At least I taught them this. What is the this that you hope that you teach your children?
So just be happy with who they are. be happy with who they are, to not care about what anybody else thinks of them, to live the way that they want to live.
How are you going to do that?
I'm going to have to do that myself. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of things are, and a lot of the times I remind myself that 100 years from now, nobody's going to give a crap about what decision you made, or everybody's going to be dead. And they're not going to remember you.
That is such a positive thing to say. I know what you're saying.
You know, I could probably word that better. But in 100, 200 years from now, everybody you know is going to be dead.
It's not getting any better, Booth. I think what you're trying to say is that
don't overthink it.
Because ultimately, in the grand scheme of the reality, it does not matter.
Exactly.
We're all just trying to do the best that we can every day that we wake up with what we have and what we're given.
Exactly. Exactly.
Not in 200 years, everybody you know and love will be dead.
That's the truth. That's crazy. Our existence on this planet is so freaking tiny, which is scary to think about. But also, it should make you realize, like, hey, stop sweating the small stuff.
Yeah.
Do this if you want to do that. You know? Go there if you want to go there.
Yes. Chase your dreams. Be a dreamer.
Be a dreamer, because it's not going to matter. Because everybody's going to be dead.
Okay. I feel like before the baby gets here, maybe you and I should converse on how we're going to say that to the kid.
Yeah.
But maybe...
I am so excited to teach my kid life.
That
as
there are
best as I know.
There are more than one way to do the quote-unquote right thing.
Right. Like, I'm very, very excited to teach them things that I wish I had done differently and to put them on a path that they love and that they are grateful for. You know, I feel like I've had so many experiences in life and so many different types of relationships, personal, business, romantic, that I feel like I'm going to be a wealth of knowledge by the time my kid is old enough to like talk with me. And I think it'll help him.
Do you feel like your children or your child will hold you accountable? Like, will you let them hold you accountable? And the fact that I've heard, because I don't have children, but I've heard that looking at your kid is like looking in the mirror. There are times, you know, you see the funny videos online where some kid's like sassy. They're like, oh, I wonder where they got that from. Meanwhile, the mom's been rolling her eyes since 86. Yeah. You feel like you're ready for that, that they're going to be the mirror for you. They're going to hold you accountable, maybe see things about yourself that you don't like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're ready for it. How are you going to tackle that?
I think it's going to be, I don't think I have to like tackle it. I think it's just going to come natural.
Make it up as you go, baby.
Yeah. What do you mean? How are you going to tackle it?
Well,
give me an example.
No, I'm just saying maybe things. Okay. Say that you had a short temper.
Right.
And you see your child portraying behavior that is short tempered.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they're flying off the handles. You'll
nip in the bud quickly.
But then are you going to hold yourself accountable to no longer have the short temper?
Yeah, exactly. I have to be an example in front of them. Yeah. Which will be a win-win for both of us.
Andre.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, it's a win-win-win.
I just
it's gonna be wild.
That's like, I don't know. That seems kind of like this. Not the scariest part about having kids, but I feel like the most invasive. Not invasive, but just the most like reality check.
Yeah,
I can't wait till my kid says something super sarcastic off the cuff back to me, and I'm gonna be like, first of all, I'm a little proud. Yeah, second of all, watch your mouth.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's weird to think that that is right around the corner for you.
Yeah, not right around the corner, but around one of those corners up ahead.
It'll be here before you know it, buddy. We've already known each other for 5 years. Think about in 5 years from now. Where do you see yourself in 5 years from now?
5 years from now? Man, I don't know. I never know that answer.
It's actually my least favorite question.
I know. I'm surprised you asked that.
I just wanted to know if you had an idea. I feel like some people can answer this question so simply. And it is my least in interviews, job interviews. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Where do I see myself in 5 years?
Yeah.
How are you supposed to answer that?
I think wherever I am in 5 years is going to be where I'm supposed to be. and put that on a t-shirt.
I actually really like that answer.
Yeah, because
I'm going to steal that.
That's how it goes.
But think about what's happened and transpired in the last 5 years of your life. Could you have ever predicted that you would be here? When you met me, did you think we were going to have a podcast?
No.
Like,
exactly.
So to me, it just seems like, how can you even answer that question?
You can't. You can't. Anybody who does is lying.
Yes.
Because you also want it to gradually happen. You don't want to manufacture anything. So in 5 years, you're going to be where you're supposed to be.
And I feel like you're going to have a whole different perspective of what's already started with this new, obviously huge chapter of your life.
And I guarantee you in 5 years, it's probably going to be even more challenging than it is now.
Absolutely. But in the best way.
In the best way. I picture myself someday being an old grandfather and like sitting at my house with like a huge family and grandkids and kids all around me. And I feel like that is when I'll be content. And I think about that. I'm like, that's also a very scary thought because then you don't have much time left.
Mm-hmm. But so, is that your end goal?
I would love for that to be my end goal.
Maybe that's what's going to make you feel fulfilled.
Be like, look at all this happiness around me and love that I had a major part in creating.
I think that's a great goal. I think that's the ultimate life goal. And as we have mentioned throughout this entire episode, there's not one way to get there. There's plenty of paths. I feel like you and I are great examples of like making it up as you go and absolutely veering off the straight and narrow.
Oh yeah, we're way off the straight and narrow. We're like out in the middle of the woods with people probably searching for us thinking that we're lost.
Yeah, it's my mother. She's wondering, hey, what's going on? But are you happy?
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't know what the definition of, for me, of happiness is yet.
Okay.
I'm always working towards that. People always ask where you see yourself. What do you want to be?
I
always
say
I want to be happy.
Same.
That's it. So I don't know what that is. I think I'll know when I'm happy. I'm happy for things in my life. I'm happy for people in my life. But I don't know. TBD.
Well, that will be a question that hopefully we'll answer sooner than later.
That's right.
I want to thank you for being my very first guest.
Yeah, thank you. This is a great setup you guys got here. Hearing a lot of good things. I'm hearing this is one of the hottest podcasts in the country right now. So for you guys to have me on is an honor.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, we know you have a very busy schedule.
Yeah.
You're welcome for letting you know that this was happening more than 4 hours in advance.
Thank you.
I guess that's all I have to say. I'm gonna name myself this episode. Coming at you, and I'll see you next week. It's Host Cat.
Give it up for Host Cat.
She's out.